We're driven by the search for better. But when it comes to hiring, the best way to search for a candidate isn't to search at all. Don't search, match with Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform with over 350 million global monthly visitors, according to Indeed data, and a matching engine that helps you find quality candidates fast. Ditch the busy work. Use Indeed for scheduling, screening, and messaging so you can connect with candidates faster. Leveraging over 140 million qualifications and preferences every day, Indeed's matching engine is constantly learning from your preferences. So the more you use Indeed, the better it gets. Join more than 3.5 million businesses worldwide that use Indeed to hire great talent fast. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/Blue Wire. Just go to Indeed.com/Blue Wire right now and support our show by saying that you heard about Indeed on this podcast. That's Indeed.com/Blue Wire. Terms and conditions apply. Need to hire? You need Indeed.
From the hills of Strawberry Canyon, I'm Coin Dang, and this is the Golden Bear Cast. Let's go. Go Bears.
And welcome back to another episode of the Golden Bear Cast, a part of the Blue Wire Podcast Network. If you didn't see the episode name, this is a Know the Enemy episode where we're going over who we're playing that week, just some thoughts, and getting the inside scoop. And this week, it is the UW Huskies. Of course, we have our dear friend Gaby Lucas on from the UW Dog Pound. Gaby, how are you doing this Thursday afternoon?
I'm doing good because I have a kitten next to me who's trying to attack my hand. And because it's the unrelated to football, but it's the first ever day of the first ever Seattle Kraken training camp. So it's just a new shiny toy. But and I'm also doing better than I was a week ago from today. Just when, if we're thinking UW football shenanigans, so overall could be worse.
Could be worse. Always could be worse. That's the positive way to think.
Yeah. If it's going bad, don't worry. It could be going badder.
That's what we're trying to tell people that are Cal fans. It could be worse. It could always be worse.
Yeah, exactly.
But we're going to talk about some UW football. So I'm going to dive right into it. All right.
Yep.
We're going to have a written version. If you're listening to this, we might already have a written version of this up on Right for Cal, but we're going to do the audio version here with Gaby. So I'm going to go through the questions that our writers had and some of our general questions that we usually ask everyone. And you're going to do most of the talking for me.
Cool. Sounds good.
All right. Let's start at the top. Let's start with some like team specific questions, right? You guys lose to Montana, you guys go to the Big House and you lose that one, but you come back and you blow Arkansas State out at home. With that, how much leeway does Coach Lake have? Like, what would cause UW fans or the donors or the AD to fire him before the season is over?
I mean, I think if they were to revert back to their the offensive philosophy in against Montana and Michigan, and that we saw like the first half of Utah last year and the first half of Stanford last year, then I think the amount of games they end up winning is inevitably so low that they would I don't think anyone could keep their jobs if they it's just so inevitable you cannot win that way. But yeah, on the other hand, if you look at like the second half of Utah last year, the second half of Stanford last year, and this Arkansas State game, then like that's a good team. It's not a perfect team, but that's a team that could pretty much wreck most of their opponents on the schedule. Granted, you know, this is the Pac-12 North and this is Washington. So there would always, even if we do that, then we're, you know, there's always some after dark chaos that would come in. But there's something to be said about we're all kind of the fan base is all kind of clenching and crossing every single appendage we have that, like, the Arkansas State scheme offensively that we saw is a permanent admission that, like, you need to make that adjustment, because it's so hard. I feel like with coaches, or just really just any, all sort of middle-aged men who have spent their entire life doing one thing, who are so convinced of their own being right, and that is usually what coaches are. I feel like they all have that thing that they like to revert back to, and if you're looking at theoretically Jimmy Lake and John Donovan being this like I formation, like 22 personnel up the A gap, like Marty ball, and trying to play ball control, like a ball control game instead of just like scoring points, which I think most of us would agree points are a good thing to try to have. Like if they revert back to that, which I feel like at one point there will, I should finish that sentence first. If they revert back to that, it's not great. And I feel like that is kind of their comfort food when everything, you know?
Yeah.
And it's so hard to break that habit. So I feel like even if Arkansas State, the Arkansas State game was definitively what we'll see in the future, I feel like there's still going to be some game where they end up being like, ooh, time to run it twice off of, like 21 personnel or 22 in the A gap for like an entire three quarters, and then be like, oh shit, we're behind 28-3. Maybe we should start like running it out of run friendly packages and also giving Dylan Morris more opportunities, so that every throw isn't life or death. And then it'll be like too late. It's like the Stanford game last year. But I also think there's something to be said about, like, obviously Arkansas State, it would be insane to not recognize that Washington has a huge talent advantage over them. Mm-hmm. But if they played the same scheme that they played against Montana and Michigan, it would have looked, they still probably would have won just based off pure talent, but it would have looked way, way different. So I'm just saying that now. I assume that was one of your questions.
Yeah.
If not, I'm just saying that now. Yeah, it was definitely a combination of the two, because I really can't emphasize enough that it was a departure in many ways from the first two games of the season, which sucked.
I think we both can at least, I put out a meme the other day on our Twitter handle where it's like, it's pain and UW fans and Cal fans, a little handshake. Mm-hmm. after two games.
Yeah. Yeah, pretty much.
Yeah. Game recognizes game.
Yeah, exactly.
But we talk about the offense. You talked a little bit about Dylan Morris. How confident are you in Dylan Morris? And do you expect Sam Heward to maybe push for the starting job at some point? Maybe not this year, but, you know, maybe this coming off season?
Yeah, I'm quite confident in Dylan Morris as long as the coaches, you know, called the correct way to call a game. Where we've seen Dylan Morris not play his best is when like against at the beginning of back to that Utah game, where they're just not giving him enough reps for so that each throw pass attempt he has is like, it is the one, like, it turns into not like a life or death thing, but for lack of better words, you know, we're never going to be an air raid offense. I don't want us to be an air raid offense. But you have to give your quarterback a certain amount of reps just so that he can just like play. If you split his pass attempts in half, like every single attempt matters that much more. And that was really the only time where we've seen him really press. And that was when he threw like three interceptions against Utah and all that. Against Montana, he looked pretty bad. But for what it's worth, I mean, everybody looked bad. And I talked about this in my Montana defensive preview that like Montana's, despite their having a huge talent disadvantage over Washington, the way that their front six works, they mostly run a 3-3-5, and the way that their front six works and they've all played together for so long. And the way that they disguise pressure and can just bring it from any which direction. It kind of, back to hockey, it reminds me of when you watch like a hockey line that's played together for years and years and years, the way that they move.
Yeah.
So fluidly, and especially because we had a new left guard who took over the starting spot in the offseason, who beat out the incumbent starter, and I looked at that and was like, oh, this might suck. Yeah. And it did, and Dylan Morris looked by far the worst he has in his career was against Montana, ironically, because of that. Regarding your second question, I don't think there's any scenario where Sam Heward, I think Dylan Morris would have to get hurt for Sam Heward to come in, or he would, if the coaching staff reverted back to that garbage play calling, which, and I say that as somebody who really hates it when people go, oh, the play calling, because it's such a oftentimes really naive way of looking at things.
Yeah.
But I think the only way Sam Heward gets in is if Dylan Morris ends up the scapegoat for garbage offensive philosophy.
Yeah.
I shouldn't say the scapegoat, because in those scenarios, like, everyone will also be pointing at Jimmy Lake and John Donovan, like they did the first two games. But in that scenario, then Sam Heward will come in and also suck.
Yeah.
maybe in the off season he could. In the off season, I think it depends on how Morris does this year. In general, it kind of in the same way that when you guys had Ross Bowers and he had been the incumbent for what, 2 years?
Yep.
I think it could go either way of Morris really clinching it based on the rest of this year, or Heward coming out and fulfilling his potential earlier rather than later. I think if Heward were to beat him out, that would say a lot about Heward in the offseason.
In the offseason, of course. Yeah, I think that's fair enough. I think that's the same thing with Cal fans that want to see the backup, because they don't think Chase was doing a good job and he started launching deep balls and completing them, and now no one's really talking about him anymore. Mm-hmm. So yeah, it kind of goes both ways.
Yeah, and I should also add, I think one thing that's really great about Morris, I mean, he's more physically talented than he gets credit for, just because he's more diminutive than not. He's like 6 feet, maybe 6'1". But he has way more poise and awareness and kind of toughness than Jake Browning and Jacob Eason had. So there's like one specific moment during his first start last year where he started kind of running sideways and backwards a little bit away from the pass rush. And I could feel, like, collectively all of the UW fan base go, oh, no, God, here we go again. Because you saw that with Easton and Browning, where they would, like, run backwards and sideways backwards and whatever, and then just get whooped. And then what he was doing, though, he ended up manipulating the pocket to go that way, and then he stepped up and chucked, like, a really great pass on the run that, and I think you see a lot more of that, of him just kind of hanging in there and using his feet to manipulate the pressure. And then make something happen. And so I don't know. I think that's something that for me personally has been a breath of fresh air too.
Talking about the offense, right? We're talking about Dylan Morris. We talked about Jimmy Lake. What's your thoughts on John Donovan? And we talked about his scheme and all that so far, but I've seen the collective. I know Twitter isn't a great gauge, but it's the one that I'm most comfortable with, and it doesn't seem like the John Donovan hire is being well liked across the board. What's your thoughts on it? Like, do we just need to give him more time? What type of situation is it there?
Yeah, looked like crap. It really is. I think this would be a much easier question to answer if we had a few more games into the season.
Yeah.
Because it really does feel like it's this Jekyll and Hyde thing of Montana, Michigan, first half of Utah, first half of Stanford, Oregon State last year, where when you go like when you are playing running the ball for the first two downs into a nine man box, versus going like 11 personnel and just like spreading shit out. Like, we're not operating a spread offense, but you can have spread concepts and you can just do like give your guy space, give your running back space. Like, you can have an aggressive running attack without. In fact, the only way to have a good aggressive running attack is by not keeping everything within that, you know, what, 10-yard radius.
Yeah.
And I yeah, so you will see more as the year goes on, because it really is, it's so hard to predict with how, what we have seen of one, the good version of that offense or better version of that offense. Versus the absolute steaming dumpster fire that is the other version. I really, really hope that that they kind of what I've just been saying, that they commit to that evolution. I think there is a reasonably so a section of UW fans who feel like the John Donovan hire and the amount of like promoting from within is indicative of like maybe a complacency culture within the AD and everything. I don't know exactly where I stand on that. I'm a little bit ambivalent. Like, I can see definitely where that frustration is coming from, and I don't think it's invalid. I don't know if I necessarily completely adhere to that, like the magnitude of those, of how much people are sticking by those accusations, or not accusations, but assessments. But I think to an extent it is kind of true, as far as maybe UW looking at itself as like, oh, we have to outsmart or like make the cute like smart hires that, or like not smart hires, but like the clever hires, instead of like just go spend money to get the best guy in whatever situation, which is kind of what the John Donovan scenario looked like, after they hired him, especially because prior to hiring John Donovan, it looked there was evidence that they were in on Rhett Lashley, who I think is now the I think he was Miami, and then is he SMU now? I don't know.
Yeah.
And then Kellen Moore.
Yep.
Who's like Kellen Moore. Obviously, that he doesn't need an introduction.
Yep.
And there was kind of a bit of discussion of like, oh, is this because just offensive coordinators are a little bit hesitant to work for a first-year head coach? Or is this because we don't have the money for those guys? Or is it because Jimmy Lake wants specifically what John Donovan has to offer? Which, I mean, I don't think it's that last one. Because you don't go from Rhett Lashley and Kellen Moore to John Donovan, you know, like they're pretty philosophically opposed. We can discuss that like till everybody's blue in the face and nobody really knows the exact answer. But I think when you're looking at since you were asking about the UW fan base and kind of where do they stand on things, I think that is kind of a shadow over, or. Yeah, it's kind of a thing that's in the back of many people's minds of like, what is the mechanisms behind the whole AD and the football program and everything that's leading to that? Is it genuinely that these are the best guys that Coach Lake and that Coach Lake wants? Do we have the financial? Is there like a financial conservatism kind of behind all that? And, you know, I don't think any of us really know the answers, but there's like things that you can kind of infer and figure out, and maybe you're right or wrong, who knows. But yeah, that's definitely not a thing with portion of the UW fan base right now.
We're driven by the search for better. But when it comes to hiring, the best way to search for a candidate isn't to search at all. Don't search, match with Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform with over 350 million global monthly visitors, according to Indeed data, and a matching engine that helps you find quality candidates fast. Ditch the busy work. Use Indeed for scheduling, screening, and messaging so you can connect with candidates faster. Leveraging over 140 million qualifications and preferences every day, Indeed's matching engine is constantly learning from your preferences, so the more you use Indeed, the better it gets. Join more than 3.5 million businesses worldwide that use Indeed to hire great talent fast. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/BlueWire. Just go to Indeed.com/BlueWire right now and support our show by saying that you heard about Indeed on this podcast. That's Indeed.com/BlueWire. Terms and conditions apply. Need to hire? You need Indeed.
Got it. All right.
Yep, yep.
The last big name question that I think a lot of us would like to know is when do you expect ZTF to return? Because I know the whole thing is fun. Like he's not out for the year, but he's like not ready yet. Like, do you guys realistically, do you think he'll be back to play for you guys this season?
I mean, he and Jimmy Lake have both said like explicitly that he's coming back this year. Mm-hmm. And multiple times they've been explicit about it. Originally the timeline was for his Achilles was like the earliest he would come back, I think was like early November.
Yeah.
But there's such a wide variety of like on that timeline. I think it's like 6 to 12 months or 10 months for an mm-hmm. Achilles. So, you know, but I have no idea further than that. I would like him back now because he's awesome. He's so much fun to watch. I have no idea. Selfishly, I hope it's sooner rather than later, but with the caveat of like without rushing him back, because the absolute worst thing would be rushing him back from injury and then you know, something else worse happening. But he has addressed that fear actually, like on Twitter and stuff. He's mentioned a couple times like, hey guys, UW fans who are worrying about this, because I think people were kind of in his mentions of like, don't rush your recovery. And he was like, guys, me and my medical team, like, we know what we're doing. So I hope he's right. And I hope he comes back yesterday. Who knows?
Yeah, who knows? All right. We talked about all the specific stuff. We have our normal set of questions that we usually ask the opponents and their opponent podcasters and writers when they come on. So let's start at the top. Which player on offense should Cal fans know about?
I think right now, besides Kate Otten, who is a beast,
yes,
and Dylan Morris loves him, I would go with Jalen McMillan. if Romo Dunze weren't injured, I would put him up there too. In fact, I would probably put him there first. But yeah, J-Mac had, I think he had like 176 yards receiving or something last week.
Mm-hmm.
He was injured for the first game. He was like, he had like thumb surgery or something. He was injured then. He like suited up and played like 5 snaps or 10 snaps or something against Michigan, but he was effectively a decoy. They didn't like, I don't think they targeted him. They might've given him like a jet sweep once. But he kicked butt last mm-hmm. game, which again, asterisk talent advantage, but that's in line with what we knew we were getting with him as a recruit. Like he was a big time recruit, and like a kind of a good route runner, like a really fluid route runner. He's a tall target who's also really fast. So he's between that footwork and how fluid it is and his just straight line speed, he's definitely a deep threat. And then we also, like last year, he actually, this sounds bonkers to say, and I think a lot of UW fans would kind of double take it, this last season he only had one catch for, I want to say like 16 yards, but he was like this close on a handful of deep shots that would have been like like 60 yard completions. So I think because we felt like we saw him so often that he was actually more active. But yeah, I think last weekend was definitely a look at, obviously, I don't think he's going to go off for almost 200 yards against the Cal defense, because the Cal defense is way different than the Arkansas State defense and way better. But he's definitely going to be, I think, the primary yardage. I think he'll probably have more yards than anyone else if Cal doesn't play their cards right.
Yeah, and we've struggled against wide receivers in the passing game over the last 3 weeks. So, yeah, there's that.
That's such a bonkers sentence to me when I think of Cal defense.
Considering the last 3 years, yeah, absolutely.
Mm-hmm.
All right, we pivot to the defense. Which player on the UW defense should Cal fans know about?
I can't answer that right now because we don't know if Trent McDuffie is, well, at least I haven't checked in the last 24 hours if Trent McDuffie will be playing.
Yeah.
Because he was injured. It was so dumb. He was injured on a punt return that was like about to go out of bounds, and he picked it up, ran 5 yards, and like hurt his ankle.
Uh-oh.
He came back out and he was still like in his gear, but it was heavily taped. And he didn't play for the rest of it. Kyler Gordon opposite him isn't maybe the like technician that McDuffie is, but he's just like an athletic freak. Like he has like a 46-inch vertical.
Oh, good lord!
And like he had like a pass breakup against Michigan that was one of those ones where you're just turn into that hard eyes smiling emoji just watching it. Obviously the answer, I think, is interesting against with this defense that there isn't currently, with ZTF injured, there isn't like that one guy.
Mm-hmm.
There's a rotation of defensive tackles, including a true freshman, who are, including a couple true freshmen actually, who look intriguing. And Eddie LaFoscio, who was held out, or he played last weekend, but only like 5 snaps or something, at inside linebacker. And I think him only barely playing was more precautionary than anything else. So he'll probably be a full go for you guys. I guess you could point to him simply as kind of one of the leaders of the defense, and a bright spot at a unit that has been mediocre the last few years. But yeah, I don't think there is one single dude that's like him as the definitive answer there.
Okay. That's perfectly fine. I think the next question kind of will maybe alleviate that a little bit. Is there an under the radar guy, whether it be on offense, defense, special teams, that you think is going to swing this game for you guys? Or could be the swing factor for you guys?
Hey, it's Kaylee Cuoco for Priceline. Ready to go to your happy place for a happy price? Well, why didn't you say so? Just download the Priceline app right now and save up to 60% on hotels. So whether it's Cousin Kevin's Kazoo Concert in Kansas City, go Kevin! Or Becky's Bachelorette Bash in Bermuda, you never have to miss a trip ever again. So download the Priceline app today. Your savings are waiting.
Go to your happy place for a happy price. Go to your happy price, Priceline.
Could be the what?
That could be wins the game for you.
Yeah. I misheard that last phrase. I think. Okay, I'm scrolling through formations visually in my head right now.
Yeah, I could see. I could see her rolling through the depth chart and the formations in her head.
I think. I wouldn't be surprised if if John Donovan and Jimmy Light call a game offensively like they did on Saturday, mm-hmm. Where they give their running backs more space, I wouldn't be shocked if Sean McGrew has a good game. He didn't play against Montana or Michigan, and people were starting to kind of be like, what the actual fuck about that, because he's a class of 2016. He's a 6th year senior who came back for his COVID year. He's so small. I've seen him a couple times, like walked right by him, and I'm like 5'8", and he is much shorter than me. Like, he's listed at 5'7" on the roster. He's probably shorter than that. He's really, as you would expect with somebody like that, he's really good in space. But he's also, because he's so short, he just has such a low center of gravity that he's really good at just running behind, like, he's running behind his pads in a way that you usually expect that from thumpers, and he's obviously not.
Mm-hmm.
And he doesn't try to run through people, but he kind of does that Myles Gaskin thing of just getting those extra 2-3 yards through contact and falling forward. And by itself, that doesn't sound like a whole thing, but when you get an extra 2 or 3 yards on every running play,
yeah,
I mean, those add up over the course of a game. And I also think him specifically, because when I was watching Cal's defense, I didn't watch the Sacramento State game, but it looked like you guys had a really tricky time at, on occasion with sealing the edge off for the run. And so when I look at that, I'm like, oh man, that's Sean McGrew's music.
Yeah.
Like, just what he would be able to do with that. I think he would have the most success of any of our running back rotation, in that specific scenario. And this is all contingent on Lake and Donovan not only recognizing that, because I'm sure they do, because they're paid millions of dollars to recognize that, but actually capitalizing on it too. If they don't, then nobody. But I hope those millions motivate them.
As it should. All right. So let's talk about a little prediction and scouting that you've done. What does UW have to do to win the game on Saturday?
I think it all comes back to that offensive philosophy. Because the players are not to blame for, I mean, they're good. If the coaches call a game that isn't garbage, I think running kind of that off tackle sort of thing, getting guys into space in the running game, coming out with 11 personnel, maybe occasionally 10 personnel that's more spread out, or even 12, but lining up one of your tight ends in the slot, or, you know, using that as a mismatch in the passing game and kind of sowing that doubt into Cal's defense, just so that it's not so predictable. Mm-hmm. Then I really don't see, I see UW in that scenario having a much more effective run game if they approach it like that. And then having a kind of modest supporting cast through the air. For what it's worth, also, I did notice that, you correct me if what you think I'm seeing is wrong, but it looked to me like Cal's defense plays kind of a lot, like not a lot of like press coverage.
Yeah.
But stays back a bit more.
Yeah. I mean, it depends on the opponents that we're playing, but mm-hmm. I think because of the struggles we've had on the defensive backside, we've played mm-hmm. a little bit more zone to maybe alleviate some of the pressure of the mm-hmm. one-on-ones outside, and maybe that's in turn causing some of these mm-hmm. guys to give them like a 5-yard buffer, because we feel like our athleticism could probably catch up to them and tackle them, but we've been missing tackles, so you know.
I noticed that too. So I think if UW lines up in more maybe liberal personnel groupings and has a more balanced approach, then I could see them really taking advantage of kind of those short mid-length, mm-hmm. Whether it's crossing or out, you know, I don't care about the specific routes in that scenario, and just having kind of a moderately successful offensive attack. I do kind of get really nervous about Chase Garbers and your guys' run game specifically, just because obviously our run defense has been our weakness on defense, and it's not even close. And so I keep having these like these like daytime nightmares of just like you guys running it for a handful of yards and then running it for a handful more yards and then it being like third down. And Chase Garbers is so like he's I don't think anyone would say he's an elite quarterback, but he's so frustrating to play against because he's a pretty good passer, and then he's mobile to the point where like he's not just going to take off and book it, but right I can just see us giving up these like third and short but passing downs, third downs. I could see Cal having a lot of third down conversions that are just like so discouraging for UW, and I hate it very much. Thank you. But yeah, I think Cal would quite easily win if we show up doing the same thing that we did against Michigan. I think UW definitely has the advantage if they don't. So it's all up to Jimmy Lake and John Donovan.
Putting it on those shoulders.
Yeah. Which, again, they're paid millions, so that's whose shoulders it should be yep. on. And they should just make the right call.
I mean, you did kind of allude to it, but the following question for me was going to be, what does Cal have to do to win the game? But do you have any other thoughts on that?
Yeah, I think, I think they're on defense, like cleaning up that tackling, mm-hmm. like you said, which I noticed too, which was, again, another thing that felt so uncharacteristic
Absolutely.
Of Cal when I was watching them. Because your guys' defense ever since Wilcox got there is very similar to ours, and the last couple of years has been, I don't know statistically if they've been better, but the eye test wise, like they've looked better
yep.
in many ways. So I think just cleaning that up, and especially I think improvement on the edge. On the edge in the passing game, in the rushing game for UW, because I think that would take away. I think if you guys can seal the edge better against the running game, I could see then John Donovan and Jimmy Lake in that scenario where they try to attack that first. I could see them then like getting all bread and butter panicky and just going back to like boring 22 personnel, A gap. Pass for 4 yards, punt. So I think defensively for Cal, that's what I look at. And then offensively, I would say offensively, just relying on your guys' running game more often than not. And then let Chase Garbers kind of clean up whatever the rest is that he has to. And for what it's worth, that's the other thing why on offense I want to see Lake and Donovan call that more liberal, more open philosophy, just because that also will force Cal to have more urgency on offense. Mm-hmm. And when they do that and have to throw and all that instead of just marching down the field for an 8-minute possession, then UW's defense can play more efficiently too and play more to their game. So those are kind of on my mind as the primary things for if you're Cal.
All right.
Yeah.
We talked about what UW needs to do, what Cal needs to do, but from your perspective, how is this game going to turn out?
There's two such distinct outcomes that, again, if UW runs that offense, the bad offense, they can't. I don't think they can win. Like they can't. Until the thing that happens is they run that crappy offense, then they get behind by an amount of points, and then have to open it up, do better, but it's too late. So like, why not just do better
from the beginning?
Because it's primarily not execution. I mean, it is. They do execute that bad offense worse too, just because it's harder to execute because you have like all but five players in this box, like all but five players on offense and defense. Yep. So it's like, of course you can't execute that very well because it's fucking pandemonium. Yep. pandemonium in like the Oklahoma drill.
Good Lord.
So, I mean, I guess I could see if they start out with that and then realize, oh, right, this is shit. I could see them then mounting like a comeback when they open it up. But it really is just, it's so confounding. In the scenario that UW plays, or calls a scheme that is better, mm-hmm. That this, the one that we saw last weekend, you know, I mean, we put up, the offense put up, I want to say 44 points last weekend because one of the touchdowns was defensive. Mm-hmm. 45. So, I mean, I don't think they're going to do that against Cal, even a little bit.
But I hope not.
There's definitely a potential there for them to be much more effective offensively mm-hmm. than they had been during those two games that sucked for Washington. and I think in that scenario, it would be pretty tricky for Cal to keep up with it just because what they need to do, like we just talked about, is really lean on that running game and then have Chase Garbers do what he has to do. And I think that would be really difficult to stay disciplined enough to do that if you're Cal, if UW comes out with a functional offense. I think what's reasonable is probably something like 30 to 21 something. But if UW's offense comes out in the good version, if it's the bad version, then who even knows? Who knows? But I hate it. So yeah.
So we're not predicting the Thor Bowl part two. Like, we're not expecting a defensive touchdown being the only thing that happens in this game. It's just, we're expecting a somewhat normalcy to a certain degree.
Yeah, well, that's the thing, is we were expecting that the first two games too. So naturally, something insane is going to happen. Cal will win, and we'll just be standing there like, what the hell, man?
Yeah.
Yeah, I really don't feel comfortable ever making a genuine, like, this will be the score prediction against Cal for the last 4 years, because it's just so psychotic. Everything seems to just be, it just does, nothing works like how it normally does.
Yep. It's shenanigans.
Yeah.
But that's why we're all going to be tuning in on Saturday mm-hmm. night.
Mm-hmm. Exactly.
The last question I got for you that we always ask on our Q&As. Whom do you most want to punch in the face? With a disclaimer, that's ooh. Of course, is we don't condone violence. But in a figurative sense, if you were mm-hmm. able to punch anyone in the mm-hmm. face, who would you most like to punch in the face in your current state right now?
Like, just anybody?
Anybody. You pick.
Like, not like a UW.
No, no. It can literally be any person in the world.
Oh, man. I really needed to... Oh, I should have had hours to think about this.
You get a free shot. You get one free shot. Oh, man. Just a haymaker.
I had a really good one like a day or two ago of somebody that I'm like, man, I would love to. And for what it's worth, I'm not a huge person, but I throw a good punch. Because if you grow up playing softball, it's like, it's the same thing. It's all feet and
it's all in the hips
and it's all in the butt yeah. and the feet. Yep. So and you know, I'm good at leverage. Oh man, I mean, Clay Travis always.
It's just the backup option. Perpetually there as the backup.
Yeah. Oh my god, this is so frustrating because I had somebody who I was actively thinking I want to just sucker punch them.
we've had some good ones over the years.
Oh. No, that's too esoteric. Well, Nick Rolovich, frankly.
Sure, why not? Yeah.
And it's one thing to be like, I don't know. I mean, obviously everyone should get vaccinated, but if it were just him being like, being, I don't know, if it weren't him being such a freaking assholey obtuse douchebag about it, then maybe I would like dislike him but not want to punch him. Yeah. But it's like that and everything about how he functions. And when in, and there was someone asked him, like, after their lost at USC last week, some reporter asked him, like, brought up all these times that they were ahead and then blew it in his, like, what, 8-game head coaching career. Yep. At USC, it was like 5 games they have lost that they blew leads to. And he was like, interesting, I didn't know that. I'll have to do more research into it and look at why that is. And everyone was just like, you and research and knowing, understanding numbers. But between that and him being an ass to that one player last year about, like, you know, giving a shit about,
yep,
basic human decency. Yep. And like the implications, a lot of the implications for him just being a shithead and about how he runs his program and how he views just like people.
Yep.
So yeah, let's go with him. Why not? And to think I liked him when he was in Hawaii.
Same here.
I don't think he was like, I mean, he wasn't cool then either, obviously, but I thought he was.
I think most people thought he was.
Yeah.
I think that's a good choice. I'm very curious now, like, with that whole situation with him and the vaccination and all that, like, how it's going to play out when he visits the city of Berkeley in 2 weeks. Because, like, we have one of the strictest public health departments in the state. Yeah, and it's like, how is he going to step onto the city? And it's going to be weird. It's going to be very weird.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, he's just been such an arrogant dickhead about it. But not about that, about everything. Yeah. Like, everything he could possibly be an arrogant brat about.
Yeah.
He has been.
I don't think there's I don't think there's a single, like, damage control, like, firm that would be willing to take on this case, because there's so many things to cover.
It's so much. And people want, I mentioned something in, like, a 30-day countdown article that we do about it. I had the topic, like, which Pac-12 coach would you want to get a beer with or something? And I wrote down Nick Rolovich and was like, no, you know what? Knowing he's unvaccinated, I don't want to sit down. I don't want to sit down, like, with him, because when you have a beer with somebody, you're within their mouth vapor distance. Yep. And then somebody immediately commented and was like, he just has his own opinion. You need people like that who stand up for it. And I was like, great. Well, I have permanent lung scarring and asthma from when I got pneumonia. So that's his opinion. And my opinion is that I don't have to spend time in his physical vicinity. But it frustrates me when people look at it as just like, oh, he's just like you don't like him because he's not vaccinated. And like, sure, I don't like him because he's not vaccinated. And so he's like willfully putting people in harm's way for a scam. But more than that, it's the fact that he's just like showed time and time again, over and over and over, a pattern of just being a total arrogant shithead.
Yep.
And this is just one example of that. But by itself, you know, by itself, it's one thing, but everything altogether, like, you're just an ass. So, yeah, that's that.
That's it.
Anyways, all my Coug family and friends, everybody I know, regardless of political, which it shouldn't be a political thing, but regardless of views, wants Nick Rolovich fired. Because, I know a lot of Cougs, and they all hate him.
Not great when you're the highest paid employee in the state, and basically half the state doesn't like you, so...
Mm-hmm. Oh, more than half.
More than half. Okay, more than half.
At least half don't like him because he's a cougar.
Yeah.
And the majority of the Cougs don't like him because he's an ass who sucks as a head coach. If you're going to be an ass, at least be good.
Right. You have that masking for you. That's the barrier. That's the moat between you and the angry mob, is that you have wins.
Mm-hmm.
Well.
Yeah.
Well, we're going to punch Nick Rolovich, figuratively.
Yeah. But do you, I don't know if you listen to my brother and me, but I'm sure somebody listening to this does listen to my brother and me. So how they hear what I'm about to say in the same voice as when they say, kiss your dad square on the mouth, punch Nick Rolovich right in the face.
I don't think there's a better way to end this podcast. I don't even know. I think that's the best closure. All right. That's the best way. Thank you, Gaby, for coming on and talking UW. If you want to go read her stuff or all of the good stuff at UW Dog Pound, it's UWDogPound.com. And
absolutely.
You follow them on Twitter.
Catch me there.
Yeah. They're one of the fun ones. I will vouch for them. Yeah. They're one of the fun ones on SBD.
We are cool.
Yeah, they are pretty cool.
There's like none of our writers that I don't like, which is... good.
Yeah. We are all one happy family.
Peace out.
But
yeah.
Go Bears.